that, well, it's fascinating to me. Fascinating because there are some souls out there that vibrate at the same frequency. And yours is one of them. And I'm not trying to, as they say, shoot sunshine up your skirt or compliment you unnecessarily. But we do think alike in some ways, and the people that you meet in your life, you should really perk up and pay attention if you feel an affinity for another soul. This inspiration that he left behind when he passed away, I still hadn't gotten my license, you know. It was just just 3 years later after the house burned down that he passed away. But I made good on the inspiration that he had given me, and so I count him my Elmer, as it were. The one night that he tried to demonstrate this radio was with you described this to someone else on a QSO just this week, I believe. It's a 300 ohm zip line that you know, used to connect rabbit ears with with a television. I think it's 300 ohms. Doesn't have little windows in it. It's a solid two-conductor line. He used a strip of that to make a J-pole. And he lives in, at the time, he lived in Simpsonville. Simpsonville is in a shadow, I'm pretty sure. People that check in from Simpsonville and their signal is way down. Well, he couldn't make it in that night, but he was trying to make contact with this net and show me what amateur radio was about, this part of it anyway. And I'll never forget that moment, though it was, a demonstration that didn't quite work. He was the kind of fellow that shared the stuff in his head. And you're the same kind of guy. You share your head. And that's our charge. Once we become an amateur, once we are in this hobby, we ought to give it to other people that seem to be interested, of course. You know, you just don't go talking to people who seem not to be interested at all. And there's a bunch of those, too. But if someone seems to be interested, open up. There's a flood, of course. You have to put a gate on it and control it. There's so much to learn about this hobby. But the thing that I've, just this week also, I've determined that the thing that the next person to ask me about amateur radio, I'm going to preach, is antennas. This has proven to be true in my own life. No matter what radio, if it's $10,000 radio or a $35 radio, it's the antenna that makes it work. It really is. And it's so... that is so wide and so deep, really. It's fascinating. Continues to be fascinating. Anyway, it's a lot of fun to do this. I don't do it often enough anymore, but, you know, things are what they are. Dave, it's been a pleasure to talk with you. It's a pleasure to listen also. I do a lot of that lately. Thank you so much for what you do for this net and for bringing us all together. You know, it does take a lot of effort to bring this, make it available to everybody, every night of the world. Thank you. And with that, I'll wish you a good night. Everyone out there, have a good night and a safe one. This is KK4JBQ. 7-3.
Well, I like the way you put that, Larry. We resonate at the same frequencies. That's pretty cool. I have never thought of it that way, but there are people that do that, right? They're on the same wavelength. You're resonating at the same peaks and valleys, and it's a really high frequency, high pitch frequency. Appreciate you being there. While you were talking, Jimmy checked in, so we're going to recognize N4MMW. That's Jimmy. who is checking in via APERS, who's checking in via EchoLink text message. Good to have you with tonight, Jimmy. Do take care. Stay safe. Appreciate you being there. And Larry, appreciate you hanging around for the rag chew portion of the net. And that antenna is what my dad's radio is on now, the one you're talking about. I built one. No, I didn't build one. I was going to build one. I did build one, but that's not this one. I've got this one at the Shelby Hamfest. There was a guy in the back. If you go all the way back to the back where the horse stables was, there's a guy, when you hit the back wall and you go to the left on the far side, he had a wall full of them, and I picked two of them off that wall and got me two of them, because those things, that's the handiest thing. That's an antenna that will fit in your shirt pocket, and then you string it out. It's a really long antenna. All right, and you hang it up on a nail or something like that, and it works really good. Well, I got one hanging in the peak of the roof of the house, so it's not in the weather. I got some nice coax going up to it, and I use it for APERS now, and it receives and sends APERS messages just fine. And it's pretty high up in the air because it's a two-story house, so that's like the third story. The attic is like the third story, so it's got some good elevation. Because it's in the peak up there at the top, and it stands the hot weather. Hot weather doesn't bother it a bit. It can be 140 up there in that attic. It gets really hot up there, and that thing works just as good as if it's 20 degrees outside. Anyway, that's good antenna. I know exactly what you're talking about. No windows in it. Solid insulation between the two leads. Used to be in everybody's house. Antenna, a TV antenna, went up to the rabbit ears or went to your outside antenna. And works really, really good as a J-pole. Appreciate you being here. Take care. Stay safe. Look forward to doing it again the next time. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet would like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW.
J-I-4-L-C-I has got a comment or two.
Go right ahead, Andy.
Thinking about the 300 ohm twin leads with the two connectors on the back of those older TVs. And you was thinking earlier about Max, W8KBW. He now holds an extra class license himself, and of course KB0KBJ. And this radio I'm using right now is similar to what the station in North Carolina has. I'm right now talking on the ICO28T. KI4LZI portable.
Well, Andy, you have an incredible memory. And it used to be WB8KBW. And he took the B out. And that threw me for a loop. Because I'm used to WB8KBW. It's kind of like Gene had a B, W before. And I can't remember the end of it. But Gene used to talk to me every single morning when I drove to Charlotte. And he could tell when I came on the radio, like if I was on the phone or somebody talking. And it would be kind of late before I get on the road up there. When I keyed up and I started talking, a few minutes into the conversation, Gene would tell me where I was. You're at that low point right before the way station on this side of the state line, or you're at the way station on the North Carolina side of the state line. He knew where I was. That was pretty cool. But, that's cool that you remember Max's name, but that was Steve and Max that were having a CUSO, and I sat there and listened to them on that bridge while I shook up and down when the trucks went by and said, I'm going to do this. Cool. Very cool, Andy. Appreciate you doing that. And you got the ICOM. That's the handheld. It's a pretty big handheld, right? It's got a really decent battery in it.
KI4LCI portable. Currently, I got a 14-volt battery pack on it right now, but Gene was WB4ZBZ, but this here's an ancient one I got here that I have to pick up down there at the Hamfest down at Anderson, I guess, 3 or 4 years ago. Because realistics and these ICOMs of the 80s used the same battery pack. And I've got some realistics also. But this here, I remember even the station in North Carolina saying he had an ICO2AT. That's what this one here is. KI4LZI port.
I like the way you say that so nonchalantly, Andy. ZBZ, WB8 ZBZ, Yeah, that Gene's call. I talked to him for years going back and forth there. He's buried just right up the hill from where we go when we go out to the cemetery. And I go over there and look at his plot every now and then and remember those CUSOs I had with him. He made the trip to Charlotte fast on the outbound, right when I was leaving Greenville and headed to Charlotte. He made it go by like lickety-split. I enjoyed talking to him. He's a grumpy old man, but he carried on a good conversation. But how do you remember all that, Andy? It was beyond me.
You got the wrong number in his call. He was WB4. WB4ZBZ. Well, some of this is just from decades of monitoring the repeater here on and off, even before I had a license. And some of this sticks. I know I've got call signs of people that used to be here long dead and gone. KI4LZI portable, but when Max went back to Michigan, he finally upgraded, finally made extra up here, and as you say, he dropped the beat. Because he and I talk sometimes on the cell phone on the case. KI4LZI portable.
You're right, because he used to say WB4ZBZ is the way he used to say it. I remember one time I tried to catch him. We were both going to Shelby Hamfest. He had a little pickup truck. I had a little pickup truck. We were both headed up there. I told him, I'm behind you. I'm going to catch up with you. He said, no, you're not. And he was absolutely right. I could not catch him. He drove really, really fast. Anyway, I did finally run into him at the Shelby Hamfest, and that was the one and only time I ever met him in person was at the Shelby Hamfest, but knew him for years. But you're absolutely right. Yeah, and Max did. When he dropped the B, it kind of threw me for a loop. It's hard on me to change. It takes me a long time to get it in my head. Once I get it in my head, it's hard to get another one in place of it in my head. But that's the way it goes. A lot of people like to change their call signs, and I understand that completely. Anyway, Andy, keep me straight. Appreciate you doing that. What else you got?
I just heard y'all talking, and I heard y'all talking about old transceivers and people that call signs have been forgotten. That's what this here is an ICO-28T here. And I got various battery packs here, too, that I can make up my own batteries for. It's a 10-volt pack with an empty shell, and this one here is a 14-volt pack. It come with it, and I still got that T98, but I can't really hammer down on it on high power for long. It's burning my hand and going dead, too. So, KI4LZI portable, go ahead, back to you.
All right, Andy. Well, I do appreciate you jumping in there and reminding me of Gene's call and reminding me of Max and his call sign as well. You're like a walking, talking dictionary. You got all the information right there at the fingertips. That's good to have, Andy. Appreciate you being there. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet? Let's check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Call W4DJW.
For DJW, here is Whiskey Sierra 8 Delta.
For DJW, please check in Kilo November 4, Uniform Papa Yankee. KN4UPY, the Hanson. Going to be mobile again, coming into Clemson on the way home. Appreciate you calling that. Good evening to everybody out of that 73.
Okay, Net Control, I'd like to recognize WSAD. That's Mike. He's over in Campobello, who came out there while we were flying one day, and we met him in person. Good to have you with us tonight, Mike. Appreciate you taking the time to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net this evening. Hope you bring some airplanes out there to the airfield pretty soon. Good to have you with us this evening. And KN4UPI, that's Anson over in Anderson. Good to have you this night, Anson. You're sounding good on the radio. Do appreciate you taking the time to check in with us this evening. Take care. Stay safe. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet? Before we shut it down, one last call, A through Z, Z through A. If you'd like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW.
DJW. Oscar 4, Oscar Lima Kilo.
Okay, I think Stephen is a recheck, too. Stephen, were you rechecking?
I actually was listening in and realized that the flying that you're talking about is RC models.
That's affirmative. Sometimes I forget to say that. People might think it's full scale, but yeah. Some of it's sometimes about full scale, but most of the time it's RC.
I have dabbled with that in my years younger, and I had a system almost ready set up, balanced, covered, tissued, and everything else, and then my dog got underneath the bed and chewed the wing up.
Man, that's bad when that happens. I know one time I had a wing that was sitting out, and I walked into the bedroom, tripped over something, and landed right smack dab in the middle of it and tore it up. After you spend all that time building it, and then you lose it and you didn't even crash it. It wasn't even in the air. That is bad.
Your pain with that. I might be interested in finding out where you guys are at when you do go flying, because I'd like to come out and watch sometime, I think.
So there's a couple of three fields in this area. There's a lot of them in there. There's more than three. There's the Fire Tower Flyers. We don't really go to that one because it's kind of far away over in Easley. There's the Campobello Flyers. That's the one where Mike and Steve, you'll hear him on here every once in a while. It's like Steve lives like 5 minutes away from the Campobello Flyers airfield. So if you Google Campobello Flyers, you'll find that one that Mike and Steve live close to. I live closer to the Foothills Flyers. So if you Google that, you'll get their location, their address, and you can look them up. It's not quite as good of a field, but better than nothing. And then there's WCRC, which is the field that's been around in this area since 1964, I believe it is when they built that field. They just recently lost their original location, but now they're relocated, and they've got a new field. So they're flying as well. But the one we go to the most is the Campobello field, sometimes the Foothills field, and then once in a while the WCRC field. Does that help, Stephen?
Fire Tower Flyers, Campobello Flyers, Foothill Flyers, and WCRC, and I can Google them all, and your primary is Campobello.
Well, you did a good copy job on that. Yeah, and WCRC stands for Western Carolina Radio Club. Back in 1964, it was amateur radio operators that were radio-controlled pilots because they had radios. Nobody else had radios. All right, actually, they had escapements is what they had. Rubber band wound escapements, push button, rudder control. But anyway, that's why there's no airplane name in WCRC. That's one of the original fields that was around here, Western Carolina Radio Club. And they were a radio club that flew airplanes. So primarily amateur radio, secondarily flying airplanes with their amateur radio skills. Really, that's probably the biggest club in this area, and it's been the most established club, been around the longest. But, you know, whichever one's more comfortable for you, you can usually hear, Steve and I are making plans every day. You'll hear David K before CBA, who's getting an airplane ready, getting ready to go out there, and you'll probably hear Mike from time to time on the weekends making plans for or comparing notes for when the wind will be blowing the least or when the percent chance of rain is the lowest. And join right in the call, right? If there's something, if you're not doing anything and you want to go out and just check it out like Mike did the other day, feel free to do that, and you'll be most welcome.
I've been here listening to it, and I was wondering why the wind was so important to a full-scale flying, but I think I understand a little better now.
Yeah, you can fly the smaller ones in the wind, but it's just not as fun. It's a lot more fun if the wind's not, and especially for people that have been away from it for a little while and just getting their thumbs back. Right? If you've been flying all the time, you know, for years, the wind's not as big a deal. But if you're just getting your thumbs back, the wind is a big deal. And both of us, well, he's just recently retired. I'm talking about it, but not really doing it yet. But we plan on doing a lot more RC flying now, getting back into it again, and just getting our thumbs warmed up.
It can take the heartbreak of spending months putting it in together and then taking it out and crashing it in 30 seconds.
W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. That is something that you have to get comfortable with if you're going to fly RC. If you can't get comfortable with that, then don't do it. Because everything that goes up is going to come down. It will come down. It will either come down as you planned it to come down or otherwise, right? So, But here's the thing. People that build kits, I like to build kits. I like to scratch build from a set of plans, maybe, or even make the plans and then scratch build from that. That's what most of my planes are built that way. And like you said, that takes a lot of time. But you also put quality gear in it, quality receivers, quality transmitters, quality batteries. A lot of them are electric now. They don't use nitro and castor oil and alcohol like they used to. But some of them do. Some people still do that. But if you use quality parts and you're very careful about it and you get an instructor if you've never done it before, then your probability of bringing it back home like you took it out there is a whole lot greater. But if you go out there with the attitude that I know how to fly full scale, I can fly these too, then you're probably going to, you need to take a trash bag with you if you go out like that. And there's all kinds of people. They do it, right? Full scale pilots were the hard. I used to train people how to fly RC all the time. And the most difficult person to train how to fly an RC is a full scale pilot, right? They are even the jet fighter pilots, right? I had one jet fighter pilot who dead sticked the Phantom. One of very few, like one of about three people, a club of about three people on the planet that were able to dead stick a Phantom jet. And it just because he was really close to the runway and he pointed the nose straight down and got up as much speed as he could and he flared at the last second and he saved himself and the airplane. He could not fly RC. So, yeah, if it's hard for, but most people nowadays, they have ARFs, A-R-F, almost ready to fly, or ready to fly kits that you just buy the kit and they're ready to go. You just put your gear in it, your radio, your motor, and your batteries, and away you go. So that's another way. If you don't want to spend a whole lot of time on it, for about $300, you can buy the airplane, then you put all your gear in it, and away you go. You're up in the air faster, and you've got less investment of your time in the radio and the airplane. Back to you.
I'm living in an RV right now, so I don't have a whole lot of room for a whole lot of wings, but I would certainly be interested and enjoy coming out and watching. So I'll be keeping an ear out now. When I start hearing you guys talking about flying, I might just ask you where you're going and show up one of these times, if that's okay.
Absolutely. Not only is it okay, it's encouraged, right? The more the better. All right, some of those airfields need more people to keep them going. Like with us, our hobby, we don't really have a lot of maintenance, right? We have something. I mean, we have repeater maintenance. We have antenna maintenance, and coax is expensive, or hard line. So we do have bills that we have to pay, but we don't have to cut the grass every other week, right? We don't have to water. We don't have to fertilize. They have to do all that stuff. So the more, the better. Anyway, you're encouraged, anybody that wants to come out and entertain the idea of getting out there and flying and joining a club. Absolutely.
It is getting late for us here, so I'm going to go ahead and go KO4OLK clear. Enjoy.
Okay, Stephen. Well, the pleasure's all on this end. Appreciate you hanging around for the Rag Chew portion of the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. Now we're going to pop over to KK4JBQ. Larry, go again.
BJW, KK4JBQ returning. Just one last thought, and I hope some people who are still here will stay here to hear this. I feel compelled whenever I talk to another ham to turn loose of some reference that I've come across in time that might be of some value to you. I listen to podcasts. That's what I've done to kind of keep myself sane during the lockdowns and the restrictions that we all have lived with. I listen to podcasts. Many of them are ham amateur radio podcasts, and one of my most favorites is a podcast, you might say, is comprised of oral histories. People who've been in this hobby for decades, who've had their license for 60-plus years, perhaps. Lots of wisdom there. And the telling of their stories from the beginning, their careers, what's in their shack today, what their first radio was, it's all very interesting listening. Anyway, it's a podcast called QSO Today. A young fellow over in Israel, Eric Goof, is the purveyor of this podcast. His call sign is 4Z1UG. That's an Israeli call sign, 4Z1UG. He has the most recent podcast. I'm looking at it on the screen now. It's number 344. It's just amazing to sit here and listen to hams talk about how they got into the hobby, the gear that they have used over time, how it was responsible for their choices in education, their choices in career, how their life got over time. Really interesting stuff. And we thought I'd pass that along for anybody who's still here listening. KK4JBQ.
Okay, Larry. Well, we appreciate you putting that out there. That kind of reminds me of the amateur radio news line that we used to, Steve, when he was down here, started, like when Robert used to have those, and John did some of them too, not the tidbits, but the, I forget what they called them, but where they told about the events that happened in history. I found those very interesting, right? So it sounds like you're talking about something very similar, but more of a personal nature with individuals contributing to with their experience. I'm going to have to look that up. Maybe we can do something like that on the net. Maybe we can put some of those podcasts out there like we used to do. And that's a good idea. But anyway, people, be sure and go out there and check that out. I know when I used to travel before I was studying to learn to get my license, when I used to travel back and forth to work, I used to burn like CW into CDs and listen to it. Before I'd leave the house, I would, later it got on MP3s, I'd burn it to a USB stick and then listen to CW on my way into work to learn learn CW. Well, and I got that from listening to things like my wife used to get these books on tape, and we used to listen to them when we'd go on trips. One of them was Deja Dead, and it was, I know it sounds like a bad title, but it's not that bad. But it's a really good book on tape, and we'd put those in the car every time we'd go on a trip. So that, and when we would get to the end of the trip, we would not be to the end of the book. And so the next time, we wouldn't pick that book back up again until we went on our next trip. And that really, I mean, it made the trip really exciting because you wanted to hear what was going to happen next. And I imagine those QSOs about the history is the same way. Once you get started on something like that, you can't hang it up. You want the next one to come back really, really quick, and it can't absorb a lot of your time. Anyway, Larry, we appreciate you putting that out there and appreciate you rechecking. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge Team Internet? Call W4DJW.
X-ray. It's Jeff down in Ware Place. Running late tonight, Dave, but appreciate you calling the net. I'll be negative and negative. 73, buddy. Have a good weekend.
Okay, my computer got in one of those modes where it locks up and it's just not going to do anything until you wait for it. It happens. That is rare, but it happens. Net Control Electric Knives, KO4JQX. That's Jeff down in Pilsner, Ware Place. Good to have you with us tonight, Jeff. Do appreciate you taking the time to check in with us this evening. Hope all is going well with you. Take care, stay safe. Any other stations all the way through the alphabet that would like to check into the Blue Ridge Team Internet, call W4DJW. Okay, have I missed anyone for comments or have I missed any check-ins? Call W4DJW.
DJW, KN4UBG.
Go ahead, Kevin.
I was just sitting here listening to y'all talk about the planes and different things, and I got me a four-engine job. It's kind of easier to maneuver around. I got me a Phantom 3 standard drone. I kind of like those. I mean, if people's interested in the flying and stuff, you know, you can lock those on the satellites and they'll come back. You know, pretty nice. I mean, they're making some of them a lot more affordable now than what they used to. And the one I have, it flies for about 30 minutes at a time. As far as I've had it, is about 3/4 of a mile away from me. I ain't never got the Wi-Fi extender to extend it to get it to go any further. but I will do that one day.
Well, those are a lot of fun. I've got a couple of them. My wife bought a couple DJIs. They're not Phantoms, but they're DJIs. One of them's the Spark, and the other one is the Mavic Mini. The little one that weighs less than 250 grams, and I'll tell you what, it is impressive. Those guys over in China are really, really good at building multi-rotors, and very, very stable. They've got a downward-looking LiDAR, right? And they use flow control, which is optical flow, which is a camera that looks at stuff that's going by as it's looking down. And not only does it use GPS to say that it is off location, but it has also got to travel a certain distance in the flow before the autopilot will believe the GPS. One of the big problems when they first came out, they used to say those things flew home to China all the time because they do flyaways. And they fixed that problem. And everybody else still had a little bit of that. Even 3DR, the company out in California that made multi-rotors, they had flyaways as well. Not as many as DJI, but DJI figured out the optical flow control, which is a downward-looking sensor that senses the ground going by. And if insufficient amount of ground has gone by to make the GPS believable, they don't believe the GPS. And that's what caused the flyaways. You know, I don't know if you've ever had a GPS and you're looking at yourself on a map. And if, especially with APRs, you can see it all the time. Depending on the horizontal delusion of precision, that means how low is the GPS on the horizon. The lower it is on the horizon, the more horizontal delusion of precision you get. It's just a mathematical thing. A mathematical equation gets less precise as the angle gets more critical. And it'll think it's somewhere else, and it'll move around. And you're standing still. You're not doing anything. And the GPS will be hopping all over the place. Well, that's what the flyaways were. The multirotor was in one location, and it thought it should be in somewhere else. So it took off and went over there to that location. And then all of a sudden, it had to come back. And sometimes it's so fast, it would crash itself. That optical flow control was a huge breakthrough. And now it won't believe that, and it'll discount the GPS, and it'll stay where it is. And then when the GPS stops misbehaving, it'll start trusting the GPS again. And that's how it uses its return to home. So, yeah, Kevin, those are really fun. Those are really nice. And those guys really have their stuff together now, DJI. They're a really good company.
Sure, that's something that, you know, that I've been playing with for a few years now, and I ain't gonna lie to you, man, from going to, you know, not knowing about technology to trying to get into technology, man, I ain't gonna lie to you, that is a pain in the rear, you know, because, I mean, you have to, you know, without watching the videos on it, I mean, you have to go on YouTube and Google how people's done theirs and do yours the same way and watch the videos of how to, you know, calibrate them and different things. And, you know, and by reading that book is Spanish, man, to me. And, well, finally, I started Googling everything online and watching videos. It took me like 4 videos before I ever had the courage to try it, you know, and, I got it going, but one day I went out there, thought, you know, just like y'all was talking about the planes, you know, oh boy, I done got this thing down pat. I've been flying this thing for a month now. Set that joker down in the road, and she come uncalibrated. GPS wouldn't lock onto it. And boy, I tell you what, you talking about trying to control something that you're not used to controlling because GPS controls it. It was kind of hard. It took me 5 minutes to get that joker to come back to the ground. And that thing took off, and it was going straight up. I mean, it was leaving here. I mean, that was without me touching the stick or anything. I mean, the stick was set in the center position. Well, finally, I got that joker back to the ground and just kept holding the button down until I got it to sit on the ground, and I clicked the button down, you know, to cut the power off to it. And I don't know, man, that scared me half to death. I just knew that was, you know, $500-some gone, you know. I just knew that joker done took off. But I got it back to the ground, and, well, after I finally got it calibrated the second time, I think I know what done it. I had my work truck sitting out there, and the whole back of the bed was completely metal. And after I got to reading up on it, you can't be around nothing metal. You can't be within 50 feet of anything. And when you do the 360 degrees around and the 360 degrees around the other direction, you can't be around no metal. Because if you do, the calibration don't set right. It'll set, but it don't remember. You know, it won't remember it in the memory. And that's the problem I had with it after I Googled what happened. And I had to go back and reset that jugger and got it back going. And I love it, man. That's the funnest thing I can play with. And about the easiest thing to R2 fly, because, I mean, you can set how high you want it to go and stuff. I mean, they have the firmware update and stuff now to where you can do the firmware update and it won't let you go but so high. But I've not done that on mine, because once you do that, I don't know if you can go back in and change it to go any higher or not, because I know the FCC wanted to, or not the FCC, the FAA or whatever wanted to have it where, you know, they wouldn't go up into air traffic control, you know. And I don't know if they've done anything any different. I've updated my app in probably 8 or 9 months, or probably a year. It's probably been over a year since I've had mine out. Before I got laid off work.
Well, you probably don't want to go above 400 feet anyway, because if nothing happens, then nothing happens. And, you know, there's not somebody out there measuring how high you are. But if something does happen and it turns out that you are above 400 feet, you could lose everything you've got, right? And then some. So you probably don't want to go. I never do that. I never go above 400 feet. I stick to the rules all the time. And just because life is a whole lot easier that way. They have a really difficult job, the FAA, because we've got the busiest airspace of anybody on the planet. And so, and they've made some huge compromises. They were going to just about shut us down completely. And the Academy of Model Aeronautics went to bat for us. That's the people that provide $1 million worth of liability insurance if you join the AMA. So if you tear somebody else's something up, if you crash into their $1 million car, the AMA's insurance will pay for it. And if you tear it up, right? So you're covered. It's worth it, right? Because it only costs you like $60 or $70, $80 a year, something like that. It's not that much for a whole lot of insurance. But they went to bat for us, and they got everybody to write their congressmen, and everybody did write them, and the FAA backed off a lot. And now they're giving us a lot of leeway, whereas they weren't before. They're allowing us to do things with certain restrictions. So as long as we do that, as long as we follow what they're setting, then we can coexist, right? The way they were going to do it before, we couldn't coexist. They were just going to push us out of existence, right? And that was it. Because they said, anytime you fly, you have to be connected to the Internet. Well, there's people out west that there is no Internet, right? So it just cut them out completely. They wouldn't be able to fly at all. And that's not one that they wait till you have an accident till they come back and charge you. They just, if they find you, you're done. And they make examples of people. And they're looking for people on YouTube that are doing it wrong. And they're making examples of those people. They're having a talk with them the first time and saying, look, this is what we've got to do. This is challenging. We've got to work together. And the people will come back on YouTube and they'll say, they called me. We're working with them. I'm doing it the right way now, right? So I don't know if that firmware update will cause you any other problems. You know, they can mess up. They're human, right? But the part about 400 feet, I would never fly above 400 feet anyway. It's just not in your best interest to do that.
I've only had that drone up one time as far as really up there, and I don't know. Where I live out over here in the hole, and, you know, I like it, never got it back, so I won't never run it up there again. But I think as high as I've ever had that joker, I think it was like 940 feet, and that was way up there. But, I mean, you barely could see that joker. And then turned around and I got it back to the ground. And now when I fly, I fly somewhere between about 250 to about 280 to 300 feet. You know, depending on which way I go. You know, because I got two towers over here around me, and I'm figuring they're probably, I don't know, 250 to 300 feet high. You know, sometimes I just kind of fly around about 300 to make sure I don't hit one of those towers. Because, you know, the camera does run a little bit behind. You know, it's a few seconds behind as far as, you know, time lapse. And, but other than that, I mean, I love that thing, man. That's, you know, one of the best things I've got, you know, as far as, you know, to play with other than the ham radio. And I've watched a lot of cool videos where people have done a lot of cool videos with them, and they, you know, they do pretty good. 4th of July, you know, I've done a lot of videos on the 4th of July with it, and it's really worked out. And I would never believe that the video would be what it is, you know, on a little bitty drone like that. But it's pretty cool.
W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net. You're absolutely right. It is impressive, to say the least. It is very impressive. Those guys over in China, they've done their homework, and they deserve a pat on the back for a job well done, because they put 3DR out of business, which was their American competitor, and I think 3DR was building multirotors before DJI was, and DJI, I don't know if they copied them or not, but if they did in the beginning, they left them in the dust, right? And 3DR was really good company. I hated to see them go bankrupt, but when everybody started buying DJI equipment, nobody was buying 3DR anymore. They had to fold it up. But they'll come back. Somebody else come back as a limited liability company, and I read that it was some of the original founders for 3DR, so they'll be back. They had a lot of ingenuity and new things that they were thinking of. I'm not wanting to do it so much for the video as for the 3D modeling using LiDAR and things like that for cell towers. Somebody's got to do maintenance on all these cell towers that cropped up during COVID, right? And it's not going to be people that climb towers that get $100 every foot that they climb, right? That's expensive. There's got to be a better way, and I'm thinking it's going to be pre-programmed multirotors that are out there buzzing around there doing a three-dimensional model that is such a good model with picture overlays that you can see the serial number on the equipment, and they can check it against their inventory and say, yeah, we've got that right, or no, that's not what we thought it was. And they can pay, you'll still make big bucks, but it'd be a whole lot less than what they would pay for somebody to climb the tower and take the pictures, and it'd be a lot more organized anyway. But anyway, it's just something to think about, something I probably won't ever do, but it's something I think about. What else you got for us this evening, Kevin? KM4UBG, W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
KM4UBG. Well, I just got another question, Dave. We were sitting here until last night talking, and there was several of us on here, and I don't know. I mean, I've never heard it before. I mean, I know we used to have, back in the day, we used to have, like, where people, you know, we thought people was trying to check in from a long distance, you know, like a mobile or a, you know, a handy talkie or whatever. And last night, there was two repeaters linked up to our repeater. And all of them is 146.610. And how would that happen? I mean, would that be something that somebody else has done from somewhere else, or would that, I mean, how would that be possible?
So on a repeater that has EchoLink, you can, depending on the software that's being used for EchoLink, you can plug in a node number of another 6-1 repeater that's running EchoLink and hit the pound sign, which is that little tic-tac-toe board-looking thing, the hash key. You know, node number and a hash key, and it will connect to their node. Now, the problem with connecting repeaters together, all right, this one, when 9 o'clock comes around, this one automatically turns its courtesy tone off. Courtesy tone is when you let up off of the transmitter, you hear it go blip, right? You don't, when you and I are talking now and we let up off of the key, it doesn't go blip. Before 9 o'clock, yeah, you let up off of the key, it goes blip, right? If two repeaters are connected through Echolink, as soon as one disconnects, if it sends the courtesy tone, blip, the other repeater will hear that. And what is it going to do? It's going to send its courtesy tone, blip. And what's going to happen when it sends it? This repeater is going to hear that blip. And what's it going to do? It keyed up, so it's got to send its blip out because that blip keyed it up. So now it sends its blip out. And now that keyed up the other repeater because it heard the blip. So it had to key up and send that out. And now it's going to blip. And they get into a blip, 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 blip. They go back and forth. So it's not generally a good idea to hook repeaters up. But if you get the system operators for the repeaters to turn off the courtesy tone before you hook them together, then that's not a problem. So, and people will do that not knowing that that might cause a problem, right? And so somebody could dial into this repeater from another 610 repeater, or somebody can use this repeater to dial into another 610 repeater. And so they could already be in a conversation with another 610 repeater. That's one way to do it. Another way is tropospheric ducting, right, happens from once, you know, every now and then. And it's not the repeater that gets into here, because this repeater is listening on 146.0.1.0. Those other repeaters are talking on 146.6.1.0. So that repeater is not going to get into this repeater. But the people around that repeater, when they key their mic, they're talking on 146.0.1.0, they will get into this repeater. So if it's tropospheric ducting, then that's because, or temperature inversion can do that too. And these storms we've got rolling in cause temperature inversions. Then you can hear the stations add another repeater around that station. You'll hear them. You won't hear the repeaters. Does that make sense, Kevin? KN4UBG, W4DJW in the Blue Ridge 2-meter net.
JW, KN4UBG. Yeah, Roger, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, that could exactly well have been what was going on last night, because I never did hear the repeaters get into the dropout and the dropout on the other repeater. I mean, it's just like we were sitting here talking, and just all of a sudden, some guys up around Charlotte came in, was talking to us, and some guys from up in Tennessee came in, was talking to us, and I'm like, then they started asking me about the repeater, which repeater, you know, was they on and which repeater was I on. I tried to explain to them, and best I could explain to them, I'm on the Caesar's Head repeater, and they kept telling me they was on the other repeater in Tennessee and the one in North Carolina. And I was like, man, I had never heard of that. So we all went into Echo, or not Echo Link, but what you call it, the repeaterbook.com, started pulling up the repeaters, and they had different tones on them and everything else. And I was like, man, I don't have a clue. And then we talked probably to about 2:40 this morning. And then finally some of them went off, and then me and another guy over in Donaldson Center was talking, and a guy from Gaffney was talking, and we talked for a little bit. And finally, I had to get off, so I don't know if them other guys ever came back on or not. But, I mean, their repeaters, I mean, it sounded like it was linked to this one. I mean, it was just, it was unbelievable. I mean, we was talking 134-some miles up the road.
Well, that is unusual, but it's not unheard of. The farthest station, back when we used to have 100 or more check-ins, I think some nights we'd get up to 140 check-ins. And we'd be running the net until 2 o'clock in the morning, 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning. That's why the repeater doesn't reset itself from not having a courtesy tone until like 1 o'clock in the morning because of those nets that we used to have. But back in that time, it was nothing to hear somebody from Alabama checking in or Texas. Because we have, I don't know how much HF you do, but we have a pipeline to Texas. From South Carolina to Texas, we have a really good pipeline. And every now and then, that opens up for 2 meters. And we used to have people checking in from Texas on our net, right, when we were running those nets that ran up to 100. And it was unreal. You'd hear people from Panama City. You'd hear people from Puerto Rico. You'd hear people from Texas. You'd hear people in Alabama. And up in Virginia, they were all over the place. And as quick as they'd come in, and they'd be talking to you, and it'd be just like you and me talking right now. As quick as they came in, they'd be gone. and you wouldn't hear another word out of them. temperature inversions do that. Tropospheric ducting does that. That's the only two things that I know of. Maybe some gray, gray, when daylight becomes dark and dark becomes daylight, maybe that has a little bit of to do with it too. I don't know. But it used to happen a lot more than it does now, and I think that's because sunspot activity is so much lower than it used to be, or just the weather's not doing the same thing the weather used to do. Now, anything else is getting kind of late. We're going on 2 hours. This is the longest net I've had in a long time, Kevin. What else you got for us?
UBG. That was about it, Dave. I just happened to sit back and listen to y'all talk about that, and I just wanted to ask that question about those two repeaters, and because I had never heard of that, and it happened last night, but that was, pretty wild. I mean, talking up in, around Charlotte and places and listening to people out of Tennessee, and I've only had that to happen to me one time, and I got a frequency program in here, and I can roll the beam up toward Tennessee and hit one of their repeaters up in Tennessee and check in with them. But, I can only do it, right there around about midsummer or, late summer. But that was about it. I'll let you get done. That way you can get signed off and get ready for bed. But you have a good one. Back to you, Dave. W4DJW, KM4UBG. I'll be clear.
Well, I remember when they put that Johnson City, Tennessee 6-1 repeater on the air. And when I was at my in-law's house on Sugar Mountain, I could stand at one end of the house. I'd walk around the house and look for the strongest signal on the Johnson City repeater. And I had two 6-1s programmed into my handheld because that's all I took up there on Beach Mountain. Beach Mountain, North Carolina is where their house was. So I'd turn it to the Johnson City repeater, which had a tone, and it was programmed into the handheld. And I'd walk around the house and find its highest signal. And I'd key up right there, and I'd get in on the Johnson City repeater. And then I'd drop it down to the one that had no tone, that was our repeater. And I'd walk around the house, and I'd look for the highest signal. And it wouldn't be the same location as where the Johnson City was. And I'd key up, and I'd be on the 6-1 repeater here. So kind of weird the way that works. VHF is like that. You can move 1 foot and you can be crystal clear in one location and can't even hit it at all a foot away from there. That's just VHF, how it works. Anyway, appreciate you hanging around, Kevin. I'm glad you're doing better and appreciate you letting us know how you're doing. And we'll look forward to doing it again in the future. Have you missed anyone for comments or missed any check-ins? Call W4DJW.
Whiskey X-ray 4, Mike Whiskey Alpha. I am down here in Central.
Check in and out. Kilo, Oscar, 4, Golf, Alpha, Romeo, KO4GAR, David, and Clover, South Carolina.
Well, there's a voice I haven't heard in a long, long time. Net Control, I can recognize. WX4. MWA. That's a new call sign, but that's an old voice. That's Matt, who's down in Central South Carolina. Good to hear you, Matt. It's been a long time. Good to hear you on the 6-1 repeater. It's been a few years. Take care. Stay safe. KO4GAR. That's David, who's over in Clover, South Carolina. David, you sounded good. Do appreciate you taking time to check in with us this evening. One last call, all the way through the alphabet. If you'd like to check into the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, call W4DJW. Okay, looks like that's going to about do it. Be sure and check back in tomorrow night where, I haven't looked it up, but I think that's going to be Mark, right? W2MJB. He was on here earlier tonight. He'll be calling the Blue Ridge 2-meter net, and I'm sure he'd appreciate you stopping by and checking in. Stand by for my net report. This is W4DJW now securing the Blue Ridge 2-meter net with our thanks for checking in. We'll now return the repeater back to normal amateur use. 73s and good night.
For DJW, KK4JBQ. Excellent net. Congratulations.
congratulations. This is the longest net I've heard since I've been checking in on this computer the last 12 years, I guess. You have a good night, Dave. KK4JBQ.
Okay, Larry, do appreciate that. And somebody doubled with you, but you won. You weren't on the double, so somebody else is in there. But it's like Gary says, you'll hear KI4DOS Gary say it over and over again, it's not the net controller that makes it, it's the people that are checking in that make the net. Like he says, we'd just be out here talking to ourselves if it wasn't for the guys checking in, the guys and gals that are checking in the net. Appreciate it, Larry. Somebody else was in there when Larry was talking. Go ahead.